I'll go ahead and read something, okay? This comes from the very beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering above the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And he saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness and called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And it was evening, and it was morning, the first day. And God said, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate the water from the water. So he made an expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it, and it was so. And God called the expanse sky, and there was evening, and there was morning the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered in one place and dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and gathered waters, he called them the seas, and God saw that it was good. And God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that will bear fruit with seed in it according to their various kinds. And it was so. And the water produced vegetation, plant bearing seed according to their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And it was evening, and it was morning, the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light to the earth. And it was so. And he made two great lights, a greater light to govern the day and a lesser light to govern the night. And he also made the stars, and he set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And it was evening, and it was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the waters teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems according to its kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, and he blessed them. And he said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth. And it was evening and it was morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kind, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, wild animals, each according to his kind. And it was so. And God made the wild animals according to their kind, the livestock according to their kind, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move upon the earth. And God created man in his own image, and in the image of God he created him, male and female, he created them. And God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And it was evening, and it was morning, the sixth day. And thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all of their vast array. And by the seventh day, God had finished the work he was doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And he blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy, because on it, he rested from all the work of creating what he had done. And I wanted to read one other verse in Hebrews chapter 11. In verse 3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed by God's command, so that that which is seen was not made out of that which is visible. Wow. Amen. Guys, I wanted to, for the next few who knows how long, I just wanted to look at a chapter that I really, really love. It's Hebrews chapter 11, and it's all about people who lived long, long time ago, who had difficult times, but who trusted God. And they're like examples for us, for people who were reading the New Testament for the very first time, and for us, and what it means to be a person of faith in a difficult time. And today, I just wanted to look at verse number 3 of that chapter, where it says, by faith we believe that the universe was created by the word of God, so that the things that you see are not made out of things that are visible. Father, help me. I'm so far over my head today and talking about things I don't understand. And so I ask you to help me not make a mess of this, but that you would encourage us through your word. In Jesus' name, I need you. Amen. If you were eavesdropping on that little prayer, I'm really over my head today because I've just been reading all week, you know, just thinking about this verse and how the heaven, the universe was made by the word of God, and just reading about stuff like, you know, that has to do with microbiology and natural selection and Darwinism and all these articles. And it's stuff I'm way don't understand. And it's totally true. In fact, Lee has a tranquilizer gun in case he needs to take me out, because I just get like so lost. But one thing I found out just reading about Charles Darwin and stuff, he wasn't so smart either all the time, because there was a place when he was 24 and he was on that trip on that ship, the Beagle, you know, because that this guy needed a naturalist to go and help document different, you know, new animals that they would find in South America and all. And he had been, you know, was supposed to be like after he came back to study to be a minister, but he didn't want to anymore. He wanted to be a scientist. And so he started gathering like all these, he wanted to gather specimens, all these specimens, and write articles about them and send the specimens and the articles and start to get published so that by the time he got home, he would already be famous. Except there was this French guy who was this young French guy who had just gotten back from a six-year trip. And his name was Daubigny, and he had got, in South America, and he had gotten 10,000 specimens and either mailed them back or brought them back. And so Charles Darwin was like, that's what I wanted to do. So he was trying to find stuff that guy couldn't find. And when he was he was on the coast of Argentina, and there was this it was a bird called a lesser rhea, and it was like 2 feet tall, but it was like an ostrich. And it was really hard to, they said it had a really weird cry. It sounds like an incoming missile or something with the thing that it makes. But it's super fast. And so that French guy couldn't catch one. So he decided he was going to catch one of those. And he was trying to learn how to use that bola thing, which are like those two big rocks with a rope and you throw it and make animals trip. He made his own horse trip, but that's all he could do. And so he was getting a little bit frustrated trying to catch this bird and didn't think he ever would. And so one night he was sitting there with his friend whose name was, what was that dude's name? Oh, Conrad Martin, this guy who was traveling with him. And that guy had just cooked dinner for them and had it grilling, you know, on the grill, and just said, you know, because he had been out hunting and everything. And as they were eating, Darwin said, what is this? And he said, oh, it's just, I thought it was like chicken. No, it's not chicken. It was just this, it was this bird. You know, it ran really fast. He was like, what? We're eating a lesser rhea. You know, so it turned out that he had grilled it and they had cooked it and they were eating that. And so Charles Darwin was like, wow, I feel really stupid. So he made everybody like spit it out, and he gathered all the bones off their plates, went into the garbage, got all the feathers, the head, the neck, and put it in a box and sent it to a friend of his in London who was a taxidermist. And so that guy took all the bones and put it together and put a skin. And he had some feathers, but then he took other feathers and that kind of looked like it and made it into one of these animals. So he kind of got a specimen, but it was really out of the garbage. And they were going to name it the Reus Darwinius after Charles Darwin, but I thought they should have named it the Reus Colonel Sanderus. Probably would have been a better name, but whoa. So he didn't know everything either. But so I've just been thinking about all that stuff, and that this verse was originally written, the letter to the Hebrews was written to people who had accepted, most, you know, Jewish people who had accepted Jesus as their Messiah, all of the first followers of Jesus for a few years in the movement of Jesus everybody was Jewish for a long time. And some of them, they thought, you know, you believe in Jesus and it'll make your life better, it'll make your life sweeter and easier. And they found that it wasn't true, that it had made their life more difficult and more confusing and more painful. And they were starting to lose things like friends and the relationships with their families and jobs even. He says, you haven't yet resisted to the shedding of blood. But some people had, like the Apostle Paul, he had shed blood trying to help other people know Jesus. He had been hit, rocked with rocks. He says in one place that he was one 5 times he was whipped. They had this kind of whipping that the Romans would do where they would give you 40 lashes minus 1. They would stop just before 40 so that people didn't die of it. He never really mentions, you know, that happening to him, except, you know, there's nothing written about it in the book of Acts about when those beatings happened. I think it's kind of like World War II veterans that didn't really talk about it because, you know, it just, I guess it seems cool to people later on, but to them it was so difficult. They didn't talk about it for a long time. And so it can be really for them and for people around the world today, not for us, but for people around the world that trust in Jesus and their life becomes more complicated, more difficult, and more painful. And if somebody doesn't tell you that that's going to happen, if they give you the impression that the other thing is going to happen, that if you believe in Jesus, it's going to make your life just so much more fun and easy and everything's going to work out for you the way you hope and all stories are going to have a beautiful ending, they're not telling you the truth. Because it will make your life in ways, it'll make your life full and awesome and beautiful and difficult and painful and confusing and when stories don't work out. And that's when you need to, one guy said, the life is very difficult. The only thing that could make it harder than it is if you expect it to be easy. In fact, there's a place at the end of chapter 13 where he's talking about people and what they accomplished by faith. And he said, by faith, there were people who stopped armies and they stopped the mouths of ferocious lions. And women received their dead back to life by faith. And others were tortured by faith, and they were thrown in prison and they didn't get out, and they were killed by the flames and killed by the sword, and they were sawn in two. And that's the way it goes sometimes. And when it gets really, really painful and really, really confusing, which it had become for all of the people who first read this letter, they had trusted in Jesus and their life had become very difficult because of their faith in Jesus. And some of them were wanting to go back. I wish I had never said I believe this. And he's writing them a letter and telling them not to go back because Jesus is truly the Messiah, no matter how painful it makes your life. And it'll all be over soon. And it is going to be awesome one day. And for right now, you need to trust God and have faith and follow the example of people who did have faith. But before he gets into that, he says, and there's something that they all believed, and there's something that you really, really need to believe if you're going to make it in a difficult and confusing and painful life. You have to believe that the universe was made by just God speaking, by the invisible God, so that everything you see was made by someone that you can't see. And there are a lot of people who don't believe that. Like, they just believe. There was a guy who used to have a show called Cosmos on PBS named Carl Sagan. And I think he died of mouth cancer or throat cancer or something, but he was famous for saying that the cosmos is all there is. There is nothing else. The only thing that exists is what we can see, or if we had a microscope or a telescope big enough, what we could see. When he was dying, he wrote to a friend and said, I would like to believe that there is something after death, but I have no evidence for it whatsoever. When after he died, they found that he had a postcard taped on his bathroom mirror that said, having a lovely time, wish you were here. And it was from the USS, I mean, it was from the white stone lines that a person had written on the Titanic. Having a lovely time, wish you were here, you know. And it's just, I've been reading about what I'm going to read you all a little bit of stuff, and it might be a little bit boring, but for me, it's mostly confusing. But just trying to understand, like, what, and this is really, really changing a lot. And there's tons and tons, well, I probably shouldn't say tons, but multitudes of scientists who believe in Jesus as their Savior. Some of the greatest scientists in the world. We have some of them here, and they who believe that God created everything that there is, and many of them are coming to believe it because of scientific discoveries of the last 30 years. And so in talking about like Darwinism and what Darwinists believe, and just kind of the classical Darwinism, it's changed a lot, but basically the idea was that everything, like Darwin's idea was that everything that exists came from like one, the first like living cell that came out of just through some thing that happened, a cell like came to life and split into a bunch of different cells and became a more complex organism. And out of that, it diversified and became different organisms. And so that basically all the organisms that exist in animals and people all come from that original thing. In fact, his book, he called Origin of the Species. The real title is The Origin of Species Through Natural Selection, or The Progress of the Favored Races in the Survival for Life, or the Struggle for Life. And so it's that kind of idea. Somebody wrote 65 years before he published his book. It said, would it be too bold to imagine that in the great line of time since the earth began to exist, perhaps millions of ages before the commencement of the history of mankind, would it be too bold to imagine that all warm-blooded animals have originated from one living filament with the power of acquiring new parts attended with new propensities directed by irritations and sensations, possessing the faculty of continuing to improve by its own inherited activity and delivering these improvements by generation to its prosperity, world without end. That was actually written by Erasmus Darwin, who was Charles Darwin's grandfather. And Charles Darwin said, I should infer from analogy that all organic beings that have ever lived on this earth have descended from some one primordial form. Oh, this one guy who has his doctorate from Cambridge, and he's a Christian, but he got his doctorate in PhD in microbiology, he said, contemporary Darwinism doesn't envision a God-guided process of evolutionary change. And he quoted the late evolutionary biologist George Gaylord Simpson, who said that Darwinism teaches that man is the result of purposeless and natural processes that did not have him in mind. To say that God guides an inherently unguided natural process, or that God designed the natural mechanisms as a substitute for his design, is clearly contradictory. One professor said, the point of Darwinism is to show that there is no need for a supernatural creator because nature can do all the creating by itself. One Pulitzer Prize-winning sociobiologist, Edward O. Wilson, said, if mankind evolved by Darwin's natural selection, genetic chance and environmental necessity, not God, created all of the species. Richard Dawkins said, Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. In Time magazine, it said, Charles Darwin didn't want to murder God. He didn't want to murder God, as he once put it, but he did. So that there's a lot of textbooks that say that the idea of like natural selection, this one textbook on evolution says it's the coupling of undirected, purposeless variations to the blind, uncaring processes of natural selection, and Darwin made theological or spiritual explanations of life superfluous. It's random and undirected without plan or purpose. the diversity of life by natural causes comes from natural causes rather than supernatural creation. Wow. Anyway, so like basically the idea is just like there's these mutations, genetic mutations that happen, and if they're good for the organism to help it survive in the like fight for survival and all that stuff, it's passed to other generations, and that's how things develop and change and all that stuff. But one guy named Michael Behe, he got his PhD in microbiology from the University of Pennsylvania. He said the idea that everything, like there was just like nothing and then a living cell came from that. He said the idea, if you put all of the carbon in the universe on the earth and let it react like as fast as it possibly could for a billion years, the possibility that that would turn into a proton, like, is like 1 in 10 with 80 zeros behind it. He said it's more likely that a tornado would go through a junkyard and turn it into a 747, you know? And this other guy said if you had proton, if you covered the entire earth with 95 pounds of protein, per square foot, the possibility that could turn into like one enzyme is 1 in 80 billion. It's just like they're basically saying, you know, it's not going to happen. But there were people in Darwin's life who believed that in God and that God made everything. And one of them was his wife, who he married this woman named, well, when he was 28, he decided should I get married? Should I not get married? And he kind of did it like a scientist. Marry, don't get married. Advantages, disadvantages. Disadvantages to getting married. It takes a lot of time. You might quarrel with your wife. Your kids are going to give you anxiety, and you might not like your relatives. Advantages, you would have a constant companion that's better than a dog. That's what he said. Like, what? And so, but there was this girl who really liked him. Her name was Emma Wedgeworth. But she really struggled with the fact that he didn't want to believe in God anymore. And he didn't want to be a minister anymore. And that he had these things. But she married him anyway. And she used to write him letters because when he told her about his theories of natural selection and all that stuff, it used to really, really bother her. And she would write letters to him saying, you need to try harder to believe in God. And they were really kind of crazy about each other, but he found she was a lot better than a dog. But in one of those letters, he wrote in the margin, when I die, I want you to know that I wept many tears over these letters. But he had done most of his research for his book, Origin of the Species, and he didn't publish it for 21 years. And some people think it's because of her. He just didn't want to break her heart. But we are like are people who, like, we believe that God made everything. That he just spoke. And everything in the beginning, Bereshith, bara Elohimet, ha shamim, ha eretz. In the beginning, God created out of nothing the heavens and the earth. And the reason that things are the way they are is because God just made them. And he made, in the Middle East, in Israel, there are 500 varieties of wildflowers. 98% of them nobody ever sees. God made them because he likes them. He made the stars just with a word. Our galaxy is 600,000 million miles across. It's just a normal size one. It has 100,000 million stars. There are like 100,000 million galaxies like our galaxy. And God just made them. And why? He just wanted to. And they're like so humongous. If you took like the earth, which is a million miles around, I mean, if you took the sun, which is a million miles around the sun, and you reduced it to the size of a basketball, the Mercury would be 182 steps from the sun, and it would be as big as a mustard seed. And Venus would be 60 steps after that. It'd be as big as the pearl. The Earth would be 78 steps after that, and it would be as big as a pea. Jupiter would be 788 more steps, and it'd be the size of an orange. Neptune would be the size of a cherry, 2,322 steps later. And the next basketball would be 3,000 miles away. I mean, it's just like the universe is just humongous, and God just made it. And he made us. The reason that we're here is that God just made us. It's in fact, it says in Psalm 139 that he said, God, you, like even the individual person, like you as a person, you formed me. Which is the word knitting. It says, you knit me together in all of my colors. When I was just a rolled up, it says in Hebrew, I was a rolled up substance in my mother's uterus. And you were just knitting me together. And in your book were written all of the days before there was one of them of my life, which some people think is a reference to the DNA code. Like that little rolled up seventh, what color it will be, how tall he or she would be, what they would look like, what their vision would be like, if they would be tall, if they would be short, if they would be smart, if they would be special needs, that God would make each one. Like some people consider, God told Moses in Exodus chapter 4, verse 11, Moses said, I'm not good at speaking. And God said, who made the mouth? Who makes the person who can speak? Who makes the person who is mute? Who makes the person who is deaf? Who makes the person who can see? Who makes the person who is blind? Is it not I? You know, and it's just every way a person is that God made you, made us just the way he wants us to be. And it's kind of hard to even know, like, why did God make us? He didn't need us. The Father, Son, Holy Spirit, we living in love, but he didn't need us. I almost think it's kind of like the way, like young couples when they get married and, you know, before they have kids, and I always tell them, don't do this. And they always do. I say, don't get a dog. Do not get a dog. You will never be more free than you are right now. Do not get it. And they always do. And it's just kind of like, and I don't know if this is really true theologically, but it's almost like you're like the reason people get pets is just because they're so much in love with each other that their love just kind of needs to spill over on something. I remember seeing, it was down at Panera. It was back near the bathroom where they had those boards and people put announcements, and it was a parakeet, and it said, have you seen Axel? And I was like, and it had the little strips. Nobody had taken any strips. And I'm like, really? Do I need to call this number? And, you know, kind of like, you know, that movie about Woodward and Bernstein where the guy's down in the parking lot saying, you're never going to see Axel again. I hate that Axel is either in Venezuela or in a cat's stomach. But I'm just, but you know, and it's just the way people are, but just like God made us just because he wanted you to be. Like the only reason you exist, the only reason we exist is because God wanted you to exist. And so you owe everything to him. Like you owe your, he owns you because he made you. And in Revelation chapter 4, it says there were four and 20 elders and the four living creatures, like these angelic beings, and they were worshiping the one on the throne who was like so amazing and awesome. And his throne was like jasper and carnelian stone. And they said, worthy are you to receive glory, honor, and power because you made all things, and by you, your will, they are and were created. And just the fact that God made us, we owe him everything. The word worthy is the Greek word. It's where we get the word axel, and it means like this, if this, then this, like a balance, but it's where we get the word axiom or axiomatic. And it's like, if God made you, it's just axiomatic that you owe everything to him. Like he owns you. If I, you know, if you fill in this, if I believe God owned me and that I owed all of my life to him, I would. How would you fill in that sentence? Or if I believe God owned me, I would never again. But it's true that he does. And we also believe that, you know, it's not like random, like the reason that everything happens is just random mutations, blah, and all that other stuff. We don't believe it's random. And we don't believe it's mindless. We believe that there is more than what we see. And that behind everything that happens, it's not random and it's not meaningless. If a person just believed that all of life is just random reactions and chemical reactions and mutations, then life doesn't have any meaning. It doesn't mean anything. There's no meaning. There was a playwright named Samuel Beckett who wrote a play called The Scream, and it starts out, the stage is completely dark, and you hear a scream, and the lights come up, and there's a pile of garbage in the middle of the stage, and the lights go down, and you hear another scream, and that's it. And he's like, wow, that is all there is to this thing. And we don't believe that. We believe that God made everything and he did it. Like even like when Genesis chapter 1, it's so the way Moses tells us what happens. He says that God in the beginning created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was, the Hebrew word is tovu and bohu. It means chaotic and empty. Everything was dark. Water covered everything, and it was chaotic and empty. And then what God did is he put in where it was chaotic, he made order and a place for everything. And then where everything was empty, he put things in the place that he had made for them. Like on day one, he made light and dark. And on day two, he put waters above and waters like clouds and atmospheric moisture and all that, and waters below. And on the third day, he made the dry land. And then so he made a place for everything. And then he put everything in its place. Like on the fourth day, he put where he had made light and dark, he put the sun and moon and stars in the dark. And on the second day, where he had put waters above and water, on the fifth day, he put a place for everything in its place, and he put birds and fish. And then on the third day, where he made dry land, he put on the sixth day, a place for everything and everything in its place. And he put like animals and creeping things and all that and people on the land. And it's just like a place for everything and everything in its place. And that's what he's been doing ever since then. When people's life is chaotic and it's empty, and he makes a place, starts to put order, and he starts to fill it. And he puts a place for everything and everything in its place. And that's what he's been doing like ever since then. Like one guy said, you know, when you read the Bible, these are the pages where it talks about how God made everything and put everything in its place, and then it got all messed up. And then these are the pages that talk about how God fixed it. You know, and so by the time you get to like the very last book of the Bible, in the beginning, it's all just dark and water. And then you get to Revelation chapter 21 and chapter 22, and there's no more sea, and there's no more night, and there's no more darkness. And he's made everything make sense. And I think for some people, like if they don't believe that, like one thing that really pushed Charles Darwin over the edge was he and his wife Emma, their second daughter, who was the apple of his eye and just so special to him. And her name was Anne. She was musical like her mother. She was orderly like her dad. And she got sick and nobody knew what it was. And she cried all night long and she died. And he didn't even go to her funeral. He couldn't do it. And he's like, it doesn't make sense. Nothing makes sense. But we are those who believe, I don't understand it, but I believe that God, like it says he put together that the universe, the word for universe is the word eons, which means space and time. Like this whole thing, he uses the word put it together. He put it all together. So I don't understand it because I'm just living like in the middle of this thing. But there's a reason for every. And sometimes he'll pull the curtain back and you'll see God working. You know, when it doesn't make any sense to you, this one woman said she went to her hairdresser, you know, this hairdresser that, and she felt like maybe God was saying, you really need to share Jesus with that woman. And she's like, I don't want to. I know she and her husband is a woman named Joanne and her husband Ted. They drink like fish and they party all the time. I know this, but she's had 5 divorces. He's had 3 divorces. I don't want to get involved with them, because she and her husband were starting this little Bible study during the week in their home. And she goes, I don't want people like that in there, because it'll just be, but she had this prayer that she used to pray sometimes called C-I-H-U prayer. And it's, can I help you? And it's like when you see somebody and you wonder whether you should talk to them about Jesus or whatever, she would just pray, God, C-I-H-U, can I help you and this person get together? And so she prayed it. Oh, she went, okay. And she went into her hairdresser's, Joanne, and said, C-I-H-U, God, can I help you and this lady get together? I don't want to be a part of this, but if, you know, I'm just going to leave it up to you. And she sat down, and Joanne said, I heard that you and your husband have a Bible study going on, and Ted and I want to come to it. Could we come to it? And she was like, I guess that's it. But this woman started talking about her life and how her father was Jewish and her mother was Catholic, and her father would take her to the synagogue. And when her mother found out that he had done that, he would make her go in her bedroom and pray like 30 rosaries to forget her forgiveness of her sins. For it. She said, I was so confused about God. I was an alcoholic by the time I was 16. I was divorced twice by the time I was 21. I was just a mess. But she said, but recently I realized what a horrible alcoholic I was. And so I started going to AA. And it's really, really helped me. Except they always talked about your higher power and you need to depend on your higher power. And I was so confused about God. I didn't know what to call my higher power. So I just called him Ralph. And she said, I was the only person who believed in Ralphism in America. And she said, but so here I was, and I was confused about God, but I knew I needed him. And a guy came into a meeting, and he was homeless, and he smelled like puke and whiskey, and he had obviously been drinking, and he was a mess. And he stood up, and he said, at the meeting, my name is Ralph, and I'm an alcoholic. And she said, that's not my God. You know? And so she started looking for God. You know, so sometimes, like, God lets you see, you know, him making order out of a confusing life. But and so, like, we believe that there's invisible, you know, but there's more than what we see. And we believe there's reasons that, you know, behind what, when it doesn't seem like it makes sense, we do believe that everything's orderly because God's running a thing. And, like, one thing about, like, classic Darwinianism, they believe that, like, simple, everything has gone from simple to more and more complex, like a simple one-celled organism to more and more complex organism, except for now what people know about microbiology. There was a guy, Michael Behe, that guy wrote this book, where he said, what we know about microbiology makes that completely and totally untrue. And he says, it also makes Darwinian natural selection completely impossible, because the simplest single, he called it irreducible complexity, the simplest single cell organism inside of it is so complicated. And it has so many things going on. And if you take out one, it couldn't live. And it had to be made that way. There's no way it could have developed. There's a bacteria that has this kind of flagellum, which is basically a propeller with a drive shaft that spins at 10,000 RPMs. It can stop in a quarter of a turn and go the other way. And it's just like, where does that come from, you know? And so what we believe is that God put everything together in all of its complexity, so complex that we can't even understand it. And things aren't going from simple to complex. Actually, for us, they're going from complex to simple, because if I believe God knows what he's doing, he's put it all together, it's so complicated, I can't even understand it, my part in this becomes super simple. You know, because it says that God created the man and he put him in the garden to work it and to keep it. But the Hebrew word for put is a word that means, like, in the book of Deuteronomy, when God says, I'm going to take you into the promised land and I'm going to give you rest. It's that word. God gave us rest, gave the man rest in the garden. And you're like, well, didn't he have to be like God's little, you know, God's little elf and do all the work in the garden and work it? And, you know, God made us to be his little elves or whatever. Actually, when it says that God put the man in the garden to work it and to keep it, the word it is not in there. He put him in the garden for working and for keeping. And the word for working, it's not the normal Hebrew word for working. It's a word that's used of priests in the temple and what in the tabernacle and what they did. It means worshiping. And the word for keeping is a word that's used of keeping the commandments. And that God didn't put us down here to achieve stuff, to accomplish stuff, to be important, to be significant. He put us in this world, rested us here. And the only reason that we exist is to worship Him and to obey Him. It's super simple. That's all. And all the rest of the complexity of it, I don't have to worry about it. All I have to do is just, like God says, sing to me. Psalm 134, sing to the maker of heaven. Why should I sing? I don't understand. I don't know why. Just do it. Just sing. That's why you're in the world, to sing praises to God and to love Him and to worship Him and just to obey Him. You know, there's a place in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 where it's so awesome because it reduces life to its simplest. There was a guy named Brother Lawrence who was actually a cook in a French monastery, and he was just the happiest guy ever. And people asked him, why are you so happy? And he wrote letters to people, and they put them in a book that's called The Practice of the Presence of God. And people thought, you know, he's a mystic. And I used to be so intimidated by books like that. But it's not mystical at all. He just says, this is why I'm happy, everybody. The only thing I worry about is pleasing God. So if I'm saying my prayers, if I'm reading the Bible, if I'm washing dishes, if I'm gardening in the garden, I do it to please God. That becomes the holiest thing in my life. If I could get sick and suffer and do it in a way that pleases God, that would be my greatest pleasure. All I care about is pleasing God. This one guy said his wife was working in a nursing home. And, you know, a lot of times her work included, like, when older people became, you know, incontinent, like she was cleaning up all their mess in the bathroom, or someone would die in the mess. It was a messy death, and she had to clean it up. But she said, I just decided this is my goal, is to please God. If I can clean up a nasty toilet and do it to the pleasure of my God, it becomes my greatest. It makes everything so super, you know, simple. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, Paul said, I wrote to you about how you can live, walk, and please God, because that's all you should worry about, is pleasing God. And he said, and this is the will of God, that you're sanctified and you keep yourself from sexual immorality and don't do messed up sex stuff. Like, be sexually pure. Don't be sexually contaminated or sexually pollute yourself. He said, and know how to live your own body. And the person who ignores this, you're not ignoring me, you're ignoring God. And it's like, well, then why did God make me this way with all these, you know, this? I don't know. It's complicated. But it's an opportunity for me to do what I was put on earth to do, to please God. And I'm going to live a sexual life that is pure just because He asked me to obey Him, and I'm just going to do it. And if a person has a sexual life that's all compromised and stuff, they have a bigger problem than that. Their biggest problem is they don't know why they're in the world. Because we're only in the world to obey God and to please Him. It's like that dog, you know? It's just like, I just want you to pat me on the head. I just want you, hey, I just want you to pat my head. I just want, you want me to get a stick? I'll go get it, throw the stick. You know, it's just like, he throws it, you go get it. Here's the stick, throw it again, I'll go get it again. Da-da-da. Throw it again, I'll go get it again. You know, and that dog never gets to the place of, this is ridiculous. I mean, I go get the dang stick, you throw it again, you get it next time, you know? And it's just like, I don't even worry about that. All I care about is pleasing God. And it's just, and you know, I know, what I know is, I don't understand a lot of stuff, but I know that the world was created by the invisible guy. He just said a word. And so there is more reality than what I see. There are more reasons for what happens than I understand. And my life is simpler than I ever thought it was. And when you think about a person who has accepted Jesus and they thought their life was going to be easy and better, and it's gotten more complicated and more painful and more confusing, and they don't know why. And what they need to know more than anything else is exactly that. that there is more than what I see. There is the invisible God. And he has reasons for why he's letting this happen to me, which I don't understand, but he understands. And what he's calling me to do in this complicated situation is just to please him and just to obey him and to please his heart and worship him. It's all I have to do. And I think about the Apostle Paul. And he wanted to take the gospel as far as he could. There's a certain place in Acts chapter 16 where he wanted to go to up into like Uzbekistan. And the Spirit of God said, nope. He had a vision one night of a guy saying, come over here this way. So he went across over to Troas and to Philippi, which in kind of the, you know, Macedonian area. And he met these people. It wasn't as awesome as he thought. He met some women that were by a river, and he was telling them about Jesus, and somebody opened their heart to Jesus, which was great. But some other things happened. People got upset. He was arrested. And before he was thrown into prison, a guy beat the crud out of him and his friend, beat the crud out of him and threw him in prison. And he's back there in prison thinking, he could have thought, God, what's up? Why did you let this happen to me? It's just like, why do you do it? I don't know why this happened, but I know that God is in control. And I know that he has reasons for why this happened. And my job is just to worship him and sing to him. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to start singing. Right, he and his buddy started singing. He didn't know it, but the jailer who had beat him, that guy, he was a guy who had a job. He had a home that he paid for with his job. He had a family that he could house with his home. And he's like, I'm so miserable. This guy's got nothing. He's got no home. He's got no family. He's got no money. He's got no job. He's so happy. What does he have? And then all of a sudden there was an earthquake. He thought everybody escaped. He said, now I lose my job. Now I lose my home. Now I lose my family. Before I had everything and I was miserable. Now I got nothing. I'm going to kill myself. And Paul said, don't kill yourself. And he said, what do I have to do to have? It was about that guy. What do I have to do to have what you have? And he said, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. He told them about one who came and who was tortured to death. And it's like, yes, but there was more than what you see. He was the mighty God who became one of us. But why was he tortured? Well, there are reasons that you don't understand, and they're complicated. But he bore all of our guilt so that God the Father actually turned away from God the Son as he poured his punishment on the one who was. How could God the Father be separated from God the Son? I don't know. It's complicated. All you have to do is something simple. Trust in Jesus. It's as simple as that. Thanks, Lord, that we live a simple life. All we have to do is please your heart and let you be as complicated as you need to be and have reasons that we could never understand. But our job is just to trust you, to love you, to praise you, and to live a simple life.